Welcome to Cinema Chop Shop. Watch, chop, retrofit.
Alright, thank you. Welcome to Cinema Chop Shop. This is a movie podcast that concedes that remakes are going to happen, so why shouldn't movie buffs like us decide who is recast in those iconic roles? At this point, I'd like to mention our online presence. We have a Twitter profile. We are at Cinema Chop Shop on Twitter. We also have a Facebook page. It's facebook.com/cinemachopshop. And then our email address is cinemachopshop@gmail.com. Please feel free to send us an email, give us some feedback, tell us what you think, or maybe even provide suggestions for future episodes. We would love that. And also, this is hot, fresh news. We are going to have, very soon, we're going to have our own Untappd account. So the beers that we check in here on the show during the beer check-in will be checked in through Cinema Chop Shop. So that's a little pre-plug. So my name is Travis, and I will be your host. And I am joined, as always, here in the shop by our engineer, editor, producer extraordinaire, the Canadian in your brain again, Andrew Tay. Say hello to the listeners.
Hello, listeners.
Excellent.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving. That's right, because this is our Thanksgiving episode, and we have a lot to be thankful for. So also we want to welcome back to the show a regular guest on the program. The Brew Boss is back. It's Sean. Welcome, sir.
Hello, everyone.
Wonderful. And so a further description of the show, we just want to, as the police sirens ring in the background, we want to remind our listeners and anybody who might be concerned, to whom it may concern. We are not in favor of remakes or remake-dependent culture. We are in favor of original content and new and innovative ideas. And hopefully, we think that by furthering this cinematic conversation, we can inspire new filmmakers to keep that dream alive, to keep their artistic integrity and come up with new narratives. So that's the idea behind the show. But the tagline says watch, chop, retrofit, because essentially that's what we do here. We watch older movies, sometimes classic films with iconic actors, and then we retrofit them by tweaking the design with new parts. So with that being said, we're going to go ahead and kick things off with our energy drink check-in. Because it's Thanksgiving season, and we might have actually done this one before, but it's the Red Bull Red Edition cranberry flavor, artificial cranberries, and it's pretty tasty. I'm trying it right now, and I'm kind of enjoying it. What did you think, Sean?
It's great. It reminds me of those Thanksgivings with the fake cranberries around the table.
So the cylindrical shaped cranberry blob.
Yeah. This hits it, man.
I've got a really good cranberry sauce recipe that I stole from NPR. It's called Mama Stanberg's Cranberry Sauce, and it includes the secret ingredient is horseradish. It's really good. It's a really nice palate cleanser after all the heaviness of Thanksgiving food. So that's going to be the... Oh, sorry, we have another one. We've got another Red Bull. This is the purple edition. This one is sugar-free. It's acai berry flavored. And it says that it vitalizes your body and your mind. And I'm certainly going to have to agree with that. My mind and body feels vitalized. Oh, yeah, you can definitely tell the difference between the sugar-free and the fully saturated, fully sugared Red Bull. So that'll do it for the energy drink check-in. Red Bull, we know you've got money.
Send it.
Send us the money. Send us the money, Lebowski. After that, it's time for the Department of Corrections department. And unfortunately, this week, there is quite a few. We got a little bit loosey-goosey on the last episode, and I said some things, once again, that are not technically true. The first that we're going to mention is that I didn't confirm, but I asked if the first part of Full Metal Jacket was actually filmed at Parris Island, which is the Marine training base here off the coast of South Carolina. In fact, it was not. It was set there, but it was actually filmed in England because Stanley Kubrick was doing all of his work in England at the time. It was actually filmed in a abandoned British army base called Bassingburn Barracks, and probably butchering that pronunciation, but it is the actual location for the first chapter, the first act of Full Metal Jacket, because you remotely did the
recommendation
for the Midnight Double Feature, counting it as two films, which is a very it's a bold statement, but probably pretty accurate, because it definitely is two distinctly separate narratives within that film. All right, okay, after that, this one's actually Mark's fuck up. He said something wrong, and I'm just going to correct it. He was talking about a movie that's themed around the Mexican Day of the Dead, and he kept calling it Jojo. It's not called Jojo, it's called Coco.
Coco
is the movie, the animated film about the Mexican Day of the Dead. Also, the Keanu Reeves movie where he's a soldier who ends up in Tuscany, Italy, and Anthony Quinn is the old vineyard owner is not called A Walk to Remember. It's called A Walk in the Clouds. A Walk in the Clouds. A Walk to Remember is some Taylor Lautner, Nicholas Sparks bullshit.
Mark's so stupid.
Yeah. No. That was me. That was my fuck up. He just said Jojo instead of Coco.
I still blame Mark.
And then finally, this is the big one, and it's not really a correction, but just some clarification is necessary. When we were talking about the classic film Bridge on the River Kwai in the War Movies episode in honor of Veterans Day last weekend, we kind of glossed over the writing credits for the movie, which it was originally based on a novel by the French author Pierre Boulez, but that novel was kind of a satirical novel. It was making fun of the ideas of the British obsession with order and propriety. And when they actually made the movie, they hired a screenwriter. It got shopped around a little bit, but they hired a screenwriter named Carl Foreman. He immediately optioned the novel. He was also the writer of the Western High Noon in 1952. But he was blacklisted during the communist McCarthyism American Council of Un-American Activities Commission Department thing. So he was living in London at the time. He adapted the novel, adding a major American character, William Holden. The actor's name was William Holden. And he turned the novel into more of an adventure tale about a group of commandos assigned to destroy the bridge that Colonel Nicholson was building. Nevertheless, David Lean, he was a big fan of the novel, but he, at the time, was generally considered an art house director and was now ready to expand his range. He appreciated Boulez's novel, but he read Foreman's adaptation and was horrified. He said, amid various expletives, that it was awful and terrible, and telling Spiegel, the producer, that the script needed to be thrown out the window and completely rewritten. Lean felt that Foreman had vulgarized Boulez's Shakespearean drama, and he and his assistant, Norman Spencer, immediately wrote a new treatment. So there's already a second adaptation written by Lean and his assistant, right?
That's usually a recipe for disaster.
Just wait. Eventually, another blacklisted writer named Michael Wilson, who'd won a screenwriting Oscar for A Place in the Sun in 1951, was called in from Paris. So he's also an expatriate, having been blacklisted. From the very beginning, he and Lean worked well together, and Wilson wrote most of the final script. Since both Foreman and Wilson were blacklisted, neither man was credited on the screen, and Boulez was listed as the film's author. Okay? At the Oscar ceremony in March of 1958, Boulez, who couldn't speak English at the time, or maybe not ever, accepted the Oscar for Best Screenwriting amid a whirl of controversy. The controversy raged for another 27 years until March of 1985, after the deaths of both Foreman and Wilson, when their widows were presented with a posthumous Oscar for their husband's work. So that definitely needed to be mentioned and clarified. Pretty crazy.
That's a pretty crazy backstory on that.
So that brings us to the end of the Department of Corrections Department. And just a little bit of further embellishment on the, not embellishment, but elaboration on the theme of the episode, which of course is Thanksgiving. The season is upon us. We have a lot to be thankful for. So I just kind of wanted to go around the room and say what we're thankful for. But first, I wanted to make a quote from the animated movie from the 80s, the Garfield Thanksgiving. Garfield says, "Thanksgiving, food, eat, tradition," which is a good way to summarize a lot of the activities that'll be happening in the next week or so. Incidentally, the voice of the animated Garfield in the original TV program and all the specials, the straight-to-video specials and stuff, was a guy named Lorenzo Music, great voice actor, Lorenzo Music, who also did the voice of Peter Venkman in The Real Ghostbusters, the TV adaptation of the Ghostbusters. So when it came time to reboot the animated Garfield franchise, their first thought, of course, was Lorenzo Music, but he had unfortunately passed away. Rest in peace. So who do they go to for the voice of Garfield in the animated, rebooted, modern...
Oh, the modern one? Was it Bill Murray?
It's Bill Murray, who is, of course, Peter Venkman in Ghostbusters. I should just point out that I'm wearing a Ghostbusters shirt. It's very Thanksgiving. All right, so... what am I thankful for? I'll go first.
Sure.
First and foremost, of course, I'm thankful for my lovely wife, Michelle. She's my rock. She helps me a lot. And I'm also thankful for this awesome podcast, which gives me a nice creative outlet to vent in what can be at times a frustrating world. So this is a very good thing. So yeah, thankful for the podcast. All right, who's next? All right, Andrew, you're going.
All right, I guess I'm thankful for a lot of things.
Mm-hmm.
Thankful for this show. It's been a lot of fun.
It is a lot of fun.
This is our last episode.
It's currently a lot of fun. It will continue to be a lot of fun.
It really sounds like this is the end.
It's been great, you guys.
No, but like, you know,
see you on the dark side of the moon.
My family, of course.
Yes.
They've been listening from Canada, from California.
Nice.
From far away, and for my friends here, and all kinds of good stuff.
Wonderful. And Sean, Brew Boss, what's up?
I'm thankful for my friends and family, my lovely wife, Allison. She's my rock. I'm also thankful for fermentation.
Yes. Speaking of, we'll plug the newest features and additions to Seminar Brewing at the end of the show, but just... quick preview, hashtag skee-ball. That will conclude the What Are You Thankful For segment, the further description of the show, and we're moving into the Midnight Double feature, which I've got a couple, but since I went first in the What Are You Thankful For, I'd like you to go with your double feature.
All right. Low-hanging fruit for my number one favorite, Planes, Trains, and Automobiles.
So good. It's a John Hughes film.
Yep.
It was starring John Candy and Steve Martin, and we used it for the 80s comedy episode, the first thing we ever recorded. Wonderful.
Mm-hmm. Minisode 2.
Minisode number 2, correct.
The other is a fringe Thanksgiving, because there's a Thanksgiving scene in the movie, The Big Chill.
Ah, The Big Chill does have a Thanksgiving scene where they all the friends have come together and they make a Thanksgiving feast among like everybody trying to sleep with everybody else, and the uncredited body of Kevin Bacon as their recently deceased friend in The Big Chill. Love that soundtrack as well. All right, so you didn't pick either of the ones that I picked.
Good.
It's amazing.
It's a Thanksgiving miracle.
It's a Thanksgiving. It's pretty miraculous, but my picks are kind of also tangentially related to Thanksgiving, which I think that you kind of have to, because there's not a lot of movies that are just about the holiday of Thanksgiving, but there's a lot of movies in which Thanksgiving is... part of the movie. The movie spans a time period that also includes Thanksgiving, and therefore becomes part of the plot of the movie, because it is kind of at least amongst American holidays, it's one of the more dramatic ones because you have families coming back together and all of the things that they might not normally talk about during the rest of the year all kind of come to a head at Thanksgiving. It's part of the culture of Thanksgiving. So my two are Alice's Restaurant from 1969. It was directed by Arthur Penn. It's got a 63% on Rotten Tomatoes, and it was starring Arlo Guthrie, Woody Guthrie's son. It's kind of a hippie Thanksgiving movie. There's definitely things in it that I do not agree with. I don't want to promote littering. That plays a major role in the movie. They have this big, they have this kind of hippie commune, and they have a big Thanksgiving spread. And on the day of Thanksgiving, they go to haul off all the trash. And they go to the dump, and the dump is closed on Thanksgiving, so they throw all the trash like down a ravine, and they end up going to jail for it. That's Alice's Restaurant. Also, his father, Woody Guthrie, plays his father in the movie. And it also is where I heard the term Group W, which refers to conscientious objectors. All right, the second movie, on that note, the second movie is called The Ice Storm. From 1997, it was directed by Ang Lee, and it has an 84% on Rotten Tomatoes. It stars Kevin Kline, Sigourney Weaver, Christina Ricci, also Tobey Maguire, and I'm blanking on his name, but he was in The Good Son with Macaulay Culkin. Starts with an E. He's a very famous child actor, and now he's on Dirk Gently's Holistic Detective Agency. He was in Wilfred, the American adaptation of Wilfred.
Elijah Wood.
Elijah Wood. I had the E right on the tip of my tongue. He was in a movie called Paradise very early on in his career. A very young child actor there. Yeah, it's about a family that gets stranded for Thanksgiving because of a blizzard or a snowstorm. They get snowed in and have to deal with a bunch of family shit, which is, like I said, part of the tapestry that is the great holiday of Thanksgiving. All right, so those are our midnight double feature picks, and it moves us into our feature segment. It is a Woody Allen film from 1986. It's called Hannah and Her Sisters, and it does have a 93%. On Rotten Tomatoes. It was written and directed by Woody Allen, and he was kind of inspired by the novel Anna Karenina by Tolstoy. It has a lot of people in it. We're only going to get to four of the cast members, even though arguably you could spend all day recasting this movie or just talking about the myriad of actors in this amazing ensemble cast. Mm-hmm. It won 3 Oscars, including Best Screenplay. The main roles that we're going to go ahead and tell are Mia Farrow, of course. She was 43 at the time. She plays Hannah. Also, Barbara Hershey as Lee, her sister, one of her sisters, who was 40 at the time. And Diane Wiest. Am I saying that right? Diane
Wiest?
Yes.
Yes.
Who is 40 as well. She's the sister Holly. And then Michael Caine as Elliot, who is the husband of Hannah, though not necessarily the most faithful. Fidelity is not his strong suit. So Hannah and Her Sisters, you, I think, had seen this film before.
Actually, no. I watched it Monday.
Okay, so and tell me what you thought about it.
I really enjoyed it. I think that I think Woody Allen could easily have been written out of most of the scenes and improve the movie.
He just plays his neurotic, normal being Woody Allen self.
And I think they overdid the inner dialogues for each character, and I think that was a little tired.
Yeah, it kind of took you out of it a little bit.
But everything else I really liked, and as you mentioned, the surprise appearances by
tons of people. Tons I've got a list. So tons of cameos. I've got Carrie Fisher. I've got Max von Sydow, Julie Kavner, voice actress from The Simpsons, Daniel Stern, Louis Black, John Turturro, Julia Louis-Dreyfus, Sam Waterston,
yep,
and an unfortunate cameo from a pre-adolescent Soon Lee, who Woody Allen would later go on to marry. She was he and Mia Farrow's adopted daughter. But there's one more. There's one more cameo that I spotted that wasn't on any of the lists that I saw, and it was the doctor who's telling Woody Allen that he doesn't have cancer or whatever. It's Francis Ford Coppola as the yep. as the doctor that he goes to see, which is it's a lot of fun. I didn't enjoy the movie as much as you did. I enjoyed the second movie in our recast a lot more, which I think we have a differing opinion on that as well. But let's go ahead and get into it. For sure. The first role, Mia Farrow, we already mentioned she was 43 at the time. She plays Hannah, the wife of Elliot. And do you want to go first, or would you like me to?
You can go ahead and go.
All right, so I went with a woman who's a very well-respected actress. She's not quite as gaunt as Mia Farrow. Mia Farrow's kind of been skinny her whole life, but I went with a little bit more full-figured woman, Kate Winslet, amazing actress. She's been in tons of stuff. She is British, but she can do an American accent. We've seen her do that before. So Kate Winslet is my pick for Hannah in Hannah and Her Sisters.
Okay. I kind of zeroed in on age just to kind of give me an anchor for the sisters.
Yes.
And I think Mia Farrow was 41 at the time.
I have 43.
43, 41. Okay.
Yeah. We're going to split the difference. She was
42. 42. Sure. Why not? I'm going with Amy Smart.
Okay, yeah, I like her. She was in the Road Trip movie. Mm-hmm. She's also done some other...
She did Butterfly Effect.
Yes.
She was in Crank.
Oh, yeah, and Crank 2, High Voltage.
I always liked her, and I just... I don't know, for the Mia Farrow part, she just kind of jumped out at me.
Speaking of Mia Farrow, yeah, she is good. She's an excellent pick. Better than mine. You win that one. The other character that we should have mentioned who's in the movie is Mia Farrow's actual mother, Maureen O'Sullivan.
Yes.
Plays the mother of Hannah and her sisters. All right, so that's good. We've got the next role was Lee, Barbara Hershey, mm-hmm. kind of the more bohemian sister. More of like a free spirit, I think. She was 40 years old at the time. Barbara Hershey, really, really long-standing character actress in American cinema. Wasn't she maybe married to Tom Cruise briefly?
I don't think so. You're thinking of
yeah, the
you're thinking of someone
the
else.
The first wife of yeah. Tom Cruise. Oh no, I said his name twice. We can't do it.
Drink.
Right, you got to drink. So the next role is Lee, and you went first last time. I'm going with, no, I went first last time. You go.
That's fine. I'm picking Jennifer Morrison. People know her from the ABC Once Upon a Time series as well as House.
Yeah.
She's a dead ringer.
She's a good looking lady.
She is. And
as is Barbara Hershey. Wasn't Barbara Hershey also in a movie about the end of the world called Rapture or The In Rapture? I'm pretty sure she was. Or maybe that's the woman who was married to... Don't say his name. And my pick is a woman who's also on a current TV show. I think it's a Netflix show, actually. The Sinner. I'm going with Jessica Biel.
Nice.
Jessica Biel is my pick for the role of Barbara Hershey. She's... a very, very good-looking woman, very strong presence on
too.
The screen. That's what I was going to get at.
Mimi Rogers, by the
Mimi
way.
Mimi Rogers! I always confuse Mimi Rogers and Barbara Hershey. That's messed up. So Jessica Biel's 35 now. Check out The Sinner if you would like to see an amazing performance from her. But it's not for the faint of heart. All right. Moving on to Diane Wiest. Who played Holly. Diane Wiest, who played Holly. So I've got an actress who is now 43. Her name is Elizabeth Banks.
I like Elizabeth Banks.
Yep. I think that she would be good in that role. A little bit I was thinking about the girl from Bridget Jones, the Bridget Jones Diary girl, Renee Zellweger. And she looks kind of like a young, or she looked kind of like a young Diane Wiest before she had the crazy plastic surgery.
Allegedly.
Allegedly. No, she
oh, did she fess up to
yeah,
that?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure she fessed up. Or maybe I'm thinking of the girl from Dirty Dancing with the nose job that ruined her career.
Oh, Jennifer Grey.
Jennifer yeah. Grey. She's like, I went in a star and I came out a nobody. So Elizabeth Banks is my pick for Holly. Who do you have?
That's cool. Well, I love Diane Wiest, and I thought okay. that her character was fun, quirky, a little artsy.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's the scene with her and Carrie Fisher. They go riding around with Sam Waterston,
yes.
and he ends up kind of siding up with Carrie Fisher. And
yeah.
So I wanted an actress that was kind of on the fringe and a little bit...
She's a little bit underappreciated.
Yeah, yeah. And I wanted to go with an actress that was kind of had that fragile quality to her. And I picked someone who's not extremely well known except for in nerd circles, Felicia Day.
Felicia Day.
Yeah, tell and me, that got a tell me, response.
Tell me who she is.
Felicia Day is in a web-based series called The Guild.
Okay.
And it's
is it about gamers?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Nice.
Yes, it's about gamers. Basic World of Warcraft.
You have a picture of her?
Oh yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
She's
yeah.
delightful.
I can see that. I can see that for sure.
She's fantastic. I really like her. She's done a lot of TV series and. A lot of production, like on the other side of the camera, but
okay.
I like her. I think she's great, and I think yeah. that she would be cool in that role.
And she's on a web series, so that's cool and like organic, you
yeah.
know, kind of like we are. We're a real indie joint here. Moving on to the final role that we're going to recast in Hannah and Her Sisters. It was the role that was originally portrayed by Michael Caine, the role of the philanderer Elliot. He was married to Hannah, although that did not stop him from making advances towards one of her sisters. Not to spoil Hannah and Her Sisters, you have to watch it to find out which one. And I went with I wanted to mention that they originally wanted an American actor for the role, and they offered it to Jack Nicholson, but he passed, and so Michael Caine got the part. And I'm going with another Brit. He's 1 year older than Michael Caine was at the time.
Mm-hmm.
Michael Caine was 55. This is a actor slash director who's known for some Shakespearean adaptations. I'm going with Kenneth Branagh.
Nice.
Kenneth Branagh just did The Murder on the Orient Express, which we mentioned a little bit in the last episode. I enjoyed it, but it didn't do too terribly great at the box office.
Mm-hmm.
So Kenneth Branagh is my pick for Michael Caine.
I kind of went that same route as you did. I went with someone who's... The thing about Michael Caine that's always perplexed me is that he's always in these romantic roles.
Yeah, yeah. He's apparently a sex symbol when he was young.
And like Blame It on Rio from
yes.
the early 80s.
Yes.
It's like there's no way in hell.
No.
So I went with somebody.
Mia Sara? Mia Sara in that movie? I think she is.
Is she? Yeah, you might be right. I went with Steve Coogan.
Steve Coogan would be great. Yes. So
Steve Coogan, known for Philomena, uh-huh. Alan Partridge.
And the Trip to movies. Trip to Italy, Trip to
yes.
Spain.
Yes.
With the other... He's always struck me as a kind of Python-esque comedian.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I think that he could be like the lost Python nephew or something
yep.
like that, you know?
Yep.
All right, cool. I like that a lot.
So I won.
You kind of won. The other guy that I was... throwing around in my head, but I can't use him because I used him recently, is Colin Firth from Kingsman. He's actually done a remake of a Michael Caine vehicle. There was a TV show called, it's about a spy. It's called Gambit. There was
okay.
a TV show called Gambit with Michael Caine, and then it was remade, unfortunately, because remakes suck. It was remade with Michael Caine. Also called Gambit, not to be confused with the X-Men movie that Channing Tatum has apparently backed out of. All right, enough about that. That is going to, unless there's any more pressing points that we need to mention, that will bring us to our intermission. All right, Cinema Chop Shoppers, this is your host Travis, just chiming in here at the intermission to remind you to please rate, review, and subscribe to us on iTunes. We appreciate the feedback, and any review is a good review. Also, you can get in touch with us on Twitter. We are at Cinema Chop Shop on Twitter. We're on Facebook. It's facebook.com/cinemachopshop. And our email address is cinemachopshop@gmail.com. If you want to send us an email, give us some suggestions for themes for future episodes. I have about a year's worth planned out, but you're more than welcome to offer advice, and I'm open to suggestions as well. And as always, thank you for listening, and remember to watch, chop, retrofit.
Ready when you're ready.
All right, we are coming back at you, Cinema Chop Shoppers, fresh from the intermission and ready to do our beer check-ins. We've got two of them. The first one is a super special one that I think Sean should introduce. Go ahead, Brew Boss. Okay.
Seminar Brewing has popped its cherry by canning a few beers, and they came out last week, and this is Pixels that we're drinking. This is our new bestseller, a New England style IPA, very juicy and cloudy and delicious.
It's the right color. It's a beautiful example of a New England style IPA, and the cans have been super popular too.
Yeah, I'm very pleased with how they turned out.
Oh, really, really great. So then we've also got a second beer that we're checking in, and this one is a little bit more of a Thanksgiving-themed beer. It's called Citra Ass Down, because after we all eat a big meal, that's what we're going to do, is we're going to Citra Asses Down. But it's the name comes from the key hop. The hop profile is featuring Citra hops, which you were saying is the key hop in another seminar beer.
Citrosity.
Citrosity. And what are some of the characteristics of that hop?
Well, Citra imparts a lot of tropical fruit notes. Oftentimes grapefruity, passion fruity kind of aromas. So it really caught on about 2 or 3 years ago and got wildly popular.
And this is actually a double IPA, I'm noticing. So hence the Citra Ass Down. It's a double. And what is that an ostrich with a mohawk? They're Against the Grain Brewing, I should say, is the brewery that makes this. And their label art, I've always kind of been a fan of.
Me too.
It's really gonzo.
Yeah.
We've got a guy, he's got a mace, but there's arrows in it. And he's
dressed kind of like a hunter, but not really.
Yeah, and there's an ostrich, but we can see through the throat of the ostrich to his vertebra.
Yeah.
It's like translucent just in the throat section. It's really weird. But the beer's pretty good. So, Citra Ass Down and crush this beer. This beer is not candy or mother's milk. It's not brewed by gypsies or aliens. Nor does it contain any zombie dirt. This is a double IPA brewed with Citra hops. It is sticky, hoppy, and delicious. Simply drink it and enjoy it. Don't hoard this beer. Sit your ass down and drink it now. That's literally what it says on the back. 8.2%. And they say you should store it at 48 degrees. I think that's a little cold for an IPA, but it tastes pretty good. All right, that's going to do it for our beer check-in. The next thing on the list is my 2017 movie marathon. I'm not counting the two that we watched for this movie. I'm not mentioning those because I haven't actually checked them in. I'm not trying to reveal the movies beforehand. But we are up to day 321 of the year, and I have seen 298 movies.
You're catching up.
And also, I've got a little bit of time off coming up from my career job in terms of the holiday season. And so I'm definitely going to make it to 365 by New Year's Eve. I'm calling it now. I'm going on record. I'm going to make it. So
I'll hold you to it.
You should. So the first movie that I'll mention is number 296. And it's a documentary called Keddie. You can find it on either Netflix or Amazon Prime. I can't quite remember where I watched it, but it's a documentary about the hundreds of thousands of cats that roam the streets of Istanbul, Turkey.
I remember the trailer for this.
And have so for thousands of years, and also the stories of the people whose lives these cats impact. It was a pretty good documentary, especially if you like cats. I also shout out to my good friend Engin Egrahanji, who lives in Izmir, Turkey. I remember when he used to come by my house, he'd always refer to my cats as Kedi. Kedi. Okay. So now okay. It makes sense. Next movie is really bad. It's number 295. It's called Singularity, which the premise has a lot of potential, and I'm a big fan of John Cusack, but after that, this movie just gets fucking lame with like super cheap CGI and...
Oh, I love bad CGI.
Well, you might like this one. I think Mathis would like this one just because he loves the singularity. Next one is a really good movie directed by Steven Soderbergh. It's called Logan Lucky. It's a 2017 movie about a pair of brothers who are trying to reverse a family curse. And the way that they are going to do this is by robbing the Charlotte Motor Speedway. So it's a good movie for fans of film and heist movies. But also, if you are a NASCAR fan, as we are in the NASCAR belt, if you will, you would like it as well. It stars Channing Tatum, Adam Driver, and Daniel Craig. And Elvis Presley's granddaughter, who I'm always blanking on her name, but I'm going to look it up right now. She's Lisa Marie's daughter with a person besides Michael Jackson. And her name is Riley Keough. I think she started out as a model, but she's been getting some really good kind of indie movies. She was in American Honey this past year. She's not the main girl from American Honey, but she's kind of the boss of the crew that goes out in that movie. Beautiful, just gorgeous actress, and talented as well. And she's making good decisions about selecting roles. All right, then after that, movie number 293, before that rather, is a documentary that is on Netflix. It's brand new. It's called Da Vinci, The Lost Treasure. And it's really crazy because I watched this on Tuesday, and then on Wednesday, the painting that the documentary is about, the Salvator Mundi, attributed to Leonardo da Vinci in 2005. That's a long time for a da Vinci to be running around without being attributed to him. Billed as the last da Vinci in a private collection, sold at auction. It was estimated and guaranteed for at least $100 million. Do you guys know how much it sold for?
Is it three?
$450 million for the Salvator Mundi, the last Leonardo. So that's what this documentary is all about. But the documentary came out after it was attributed, but before it became the most expensive painting ever sold, ever, ever, ever. So lastly, speaking of art, number 292 was a movie called Loving Vincent, which is a Vincent van Gogh biopic, but it's one that's been on my radar for quite a while. It combines two of my passions, visual art and cinema. It's a biopic about Vincent van Gogh, but it's animated. The whole movie is an animated feature, but it's also animated by over 100 different artists. So pretty much every scene is by a different animator slash artist, and they're all done in different styles, and they kind of go along with the progression of his style throughout his brief and very tumultuous career.
What was your favorite segment?
Oh, wow. The portrait of Dr. Gachet gets a lot of mention because it's one of the last pieces that he did before his untimely death. Also, there's a good section about his relationship with Paul Gauguin, who we mentioned before. There's a lot of really good parts. I liked it a lot. All right, so that's the end of the 2017 movie
good.
Marathon for this week. And nobody cares.
No, I like those. There's several in there I want to watch myself.
They're so good. Oh, man, there's been some movies on my list that have been coming out lately. I'm going to watch them. Speaking of movies, that brings us to the second portion of our feature segment, the recast colon recast continued. So the movie number two is a little bit more recent than Hannah and Her Sisters. It came out in 1991. It's a movie called Dutch. And it stars Al Bundy himself, Ed O'Neill, in the lead role. It was directed by a guy named Peter Faiman, F-A-I-M-A-N, who only did two feature films. This was his last, his second and last feature film. Guess what his first one was?
What?
Crocodile Dundee.
Nice!
So he did Crocodile Dundee, and then he did Dutch, and then he's like, yeah, I'm done.
That's it.
So it was also, though, written and produced by John Hughes.
John Hughes.
And his fingerprints are all over this movie. It has a very John Hughes feel to it. A little bit of a Planes, Trains, and Automobiles.
I was thinking that, too, when I was watching it.
Feel to it. The road trip slash odd couple feel. So the basic premise of the movie is Ed O'Neill is a blue-collar guy. Dutch Dooley is a blue-collar guy, and he is dating a much more aristocratic woman.
The very hot Jo Beth Williams.
Portrayed by Jo Beth Williams.
Oh, man.
And I'm looking at my list, and I didn't write down my pick for Jo Beth Williams. Shit!
I'll stall for you.
I'm going to have to come up with something on the fly. And then he is going to pick up her son from boarding school in Georgia. And the son is played by at the time, child actor who was billed as Ethan Randall in the movie. And he was billed as that up to a movie in the 90s called Empire Records. You might know him later as Ethan Embry. Ethan Embry is a great character actor who is kind of having a resurgence in his career. He's done some cool movies. None of them, the titles are coming to mind at the moment, but he also worked with Ed O'Neill much later in the short-lived 2004 TV series version of Dragnet, in which Ed O'Neill played Joe Friday and Ethan Embry played the other cop. Let's go ahead and get right into it. The movie itself was not well received either. It lost $12 million.
Wow.
So the role of Dutch Dooley, portrayed by Ed O'Neill, he was 45 at the time. You want to go first, or you
I'm
want me to?
I'm so excited.
You're
about
excited
my pick.
About your pick, so you should go first.
The reason I watch all of these movies is because there's usually something about the way the line is delivered or mm-hmm. something that the actor does that sparks something in my brain that says, oh, so-and-so could do this.
Right.
And I didn't jot the line down, but it was something that Ed O'Neill said. And the way uh-huh. he said it made me think of Michael Rapaport.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely.
He could slam dunk this role mm-hmm. in his sleep.
I remember the first time he kind of came to my attention was in the Spike Lee joint Do the Right Thing.
Mm-hmm.
But a tremendous, tremendous character actor. And
he's funny as hell. I saw him.
He's always funny.
I saw him guest on like either the NFL Network or the NBA Network uh-huh. where he was just hosting a show for somebody who was on vacation. And it was one laugh after another. The guy is hilarious.
That's interesting that you say that because my pick also has a regular spot on one of the sports channels as a NFL commentator, and my pick is Rob Riggle.
Rob Riggle.
He's 47 now. He was on SNL. He's also done some pretty hilarious movies, and I will just pull up his IMDb for a second so I can name some of those.
While you're calling that up, go ahead.
He was on The Daily Show.
Yes, great on The Daily Show.
During the good years of The Daily Show. Comedian, actor. He was in the Marine Corps, so which would also help with his...
Like the real Marine Corps, not a TV show?
No, he was in the real Marine Corps. Yeah, he was Marine Corps Reserve Lieutenant Colonel. But still, that would play into the blue-collar character of Dutch in the movie. But he's also known for being in The Hangover. He's in 21 Jump Street. He's in Dumb and Dumber 2. And no, he is on the new Daily Show with Trevor Noah. I was thinking
he's still doing it. Wow.
I thought he was on the...
Well, he was back in the Jon Stewart days.
Yes, 2006 to 2015. So they might just... That might just be the picture they have is the Trevor Noah.
I got you.
So yeah, Rob Riggle is my guy for the Ed O'Neill role.
No, I'm cool with it. Yeah.
Dutch. Oh, okay. Yeah. All right. So moving it along, the second lead role, the Lil Trump. The Little Trump character of Ethan Embry, who's the silver spoon in his mouth, very, very spoiled and aloof and elitist. And his name is Doyle Standish, which I think is funny because it's a Thanksgiving movie. This is our Thanksgiving episode. And Miles Standish was the captain of the Mayflower, right? All right, we're bringing it back around. Bringing it back around to Thanksgiving. And so I'll go first on the... Doyle Standish character. My pick is a guy named Max Charles. Max Charles is 13 now, same age as Ethan Embry was at the time. Excuse me, Ethan Randall was at the time. And he is best known for a TV show called The Strain from 2015. Okay. I'm going to pull him up. Max Charles. There we go.
Looks like Rob Riggle to me.
Still Rob Riggle.
Looks like Rob Riggle to me.
There he is.
Okay.
So that's my guy, Max Charles. He's just 13 years of age. Max Charles is already an industry veteran, landing coveted roles on and off the big screen. So he's been in The Strain. He was also the voice of Sherman in Mr. Peabody and Sherman, the modern.
The one that had Ty Burrell doing the voice of Mr. Peabody.
Yes. And so who do you got?
I have someone who's pretty hot right now.
Uh-huh.
He is, I guess, 13. He is in Stranger Things.
Uh-huh.
Everyone loves him. They think he's lovable. I want to see him as an asshole. Gaten Matarazzo. It's the toothless kid.
Yes, yes, yes. Yeah. I like him a lot. I still haven't finished season 2. I've been kind of waiting to binge the rest of the season.
He's really funny in the second
one. We're up to like episode 4 or something.
Yeah. He was funny in the first season.
He needs to not fuck around with that dart, man.
Yeah.
So yeah, I like it. Yeah, I like your pick for that. So you think he can pull off a little Trump?
I think he can.
All right. So that will move us to the final role, somebody that you admire.
Oh, man, yeah.
Her name is JoBeth Williams. Tell me what else she's done.
In The Big Chill, which
she
just
was also
watched.
In The Big Chill, yes.
And she was also the mother in Poltergeist.
What?
Pretty sure.
No, she's not the...
I'll correct myself.
You're
right here on the spot.
She's the mother in Poltergeist.
Oh, thank you.
Shit. We already talked about her. Fuck. All right, we talked about her in the classic horror movies episode where we discussed Poltergeist and Rosemary's Baby. Speaking of Mia Farrow earlier. Okay, so she plays Natalie Standish, no relation. She was 43 at the time. And who you got?
I picked Jennifer Connelly.
Oh, I love Jennifer Connelly. She's so good. She's been around for a while.
She's at the right age for this part.
She is at the right age. She's a beautiful girl. Also having kind of a renaissance in her career, doing some kind of selective choices with her roles. Yeah, Jennifer Connelly's good. What else were you going
to
say?
Well, I've got some other things to say about the movie because
Go ahead. Yeah.
We did disagree on how much we adored it.
Yeah.
You really liked it. I thought it was okay. But there are some things about the movie I thought were great. The asshole husband ex-husband that we did not cast.
Oh, yeah.
Played by Mr. Shooter McGavin from Happy Gilmore.
Happy Gilmore. You know? He's in a bunch of those Adam Sandler Happy Madison productions.
Yeah. But
he's also the shithead boyfriend in The Wedding Singer.
True. There was one particular scene where Dutch and Doyle end up getting a ride from two ladies.
Oh, yeah.
Who were very friendly, and they turn out to be prostitutes.
Sex workers.
I'm sorry, sex workers. Yes. Sorry. That was...
I wrote down one of the hookers, so that's all right. My bad.
So, shall we identify who these ladies were?
I know one of their names. I know one. One of them was Elizabeth Daly, a.k.a. E.G. Daly, who was the voice of Tommy Pickles on Rugrats.
Also, she was Dottie from the Pee Wee's Big Adventure movie.
No shit! Yeah. Okay, nice.
And the girl in the backseat, Ari Myers, was the daughter from the TV show Kate and Allie, starring Susan St. James and...
I think I saw that credit, but I don't know that show.
Yeah, you're probably predating.
Probably not missing anything.
But she was cute then, and she was cute in the movie.
Yeah.
She's cute now, too. So
very nice. Yeah, and I didn't write anything down for JoBeth Williams. I don't know how I managed to.
Well, you're on the spot, buddy.
Yeah, but I'm going to go back to what I was saying earlier. I'm going to go with... Rachel McAdams. No, did I use her earlier? No, I didn't.
Not today, you
haven't. No, I didn't.
I think Rachel McAdams is fine. I have no problem with that.
Yeah, I'm going with Rachel McAdams for the JoBeth Williams, not Renee Zellweger. So that will wrap up the discussion on Dutch, which brings us to, instead of the wild card today, we're doing a new segment. Just for your Thanksgiving pleasure, we're doing T-Hanksgiving, and we're going to discuss a classic Tom Hanks film, because we're all thankful for Tom Hanks, America's dad.
America's hero.
America's papa. And the movie was chosen by producer Andrew, and he's going to go ahead and tell us what it is now.
Yeah, you guys, I wanted to pick an older Tom Hanks movie, one that's got stellar reviews.
Uh-huh.
So I went back and chose Big.
Big, the classic from 1988. Kind of a body switch movie. There was a whole run of body switch movies in the 80s. But if you haven't seen the movie Big, the basic premise is there's a kid, he's kind of a twerp, and he just wants to be big. So he makes a wish on a Zoltan machine, and the next morning he wakes up and he's full-grown Tom Hanks. So it was directed by Penny Marshall. And it has a 97% on Rotten Tomatoes. Such a good film. We're only going to do three roles in the movie. They are the role of Josh Baskins, the aforementioned kid who gets big, portrayed by Tom Hanks, of course, who was 32 at the time. And then we also have the love interest, the unknowing... She's unaware of his transformation, love interest... Elizabeth Perkins played Susan Lawrence. You might know her from the TV show Weeds. She was Celia on Weeds. And then Robert Loggia. Robert Loggia as Macmillan, the head of the toy company that Tom Hanks goes to work for now that he's big, but still has the man-child Robin Williams archetype going on. So he's a perfect fit for a toy company because he thinks like a kid, right? I've also kind of always thought that Robert Loggia was a little bit of a poor man's Gene Hackman. But he is no longer with us. Rest in peace, Robert Loggia. But he probably wouldn't appreciate that. All right, so the first role of Tom Hanks. And I'm going to go first on this one. Josh Baskins was portrayed by Tom Hanks. I threw around a couple people. I've been toying with the notion of casting Colin Hanks in a Tom Hanks movie, but he's a little bit too old. He's about 9 years older than the role of Josh Baskins. But I also thought about using the kid who played the young Josh Baskins in the movie Big. Now he's all grown up. His name's David Moscow, but I didn't do that because he's also too old. And so the person that I went with is named John Francis Daly. You would know him from the TV show Bones. He was also in a movie called Waiting with Ryan Reynolds. He's like the young rookie waiter. And his countenance is pretty uncanny. That's JoBeth Williams.
It looks just like JoBeth Williams.
Now we're going to him.
Okay. Come on. Captivating stuff.
Yeah, John Francis Daly.
Oh, yeah, him.
Yeah.
Wasn't he in... okay, yeah. All right.
He's in Waiting. He's in Spider-Man Homecoming. He's also in Horrible Bosses and the TV show Bones.
Was he in Freaks and Geeks?
Uh-uh. Wait, maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's the kid from Freaks and Geeks. You're right. Yep, Freaks and Geeks. He's Sam Weir. You're absolutely right. Great TV show.
Fantastic TV show. Love it.
A Judd Apatow joint.
True.
All right, so who do you got?
Well, you're going to sniff out my theme, but I wanted to challenge myself and get a little bit crazy with my casting.
Uh-huh.
But I was racking my brain thinking of who could play a man-child. There are plenty of actors who can. They all tend to be a little older, and like you said, you're trying to go younger.
Yes.
I went with Danny Pudi from Community.
Oh, yeah. That's awesome. He's so good.
Yeah,
he does have that kind of...
he played the role of Abed and...
innocence.
Yeah, innocent.
But,
and
also very playful and jovial. Yes, sir. You have one. You have a... All right. Andrew is chiming in to tell us that he has a
Andrew's pick. Been cheering for my picks tonight. That's what it is.
That is awesome. All right. Well, I really like Daniel Pudi. Danny Pudi.
Danny Pudi, yeah. I think is how you pronounce it.
All right. Who do you got, Andrew?
Yeah. Well, I thought same thing, like picking an actor who can play a child.
Yes.
And so I picked an actor who plays an adult on TV or did, but he plays a very immature adult. I picked Adam Devine.
Oh, yeah, from Workaholics.
Oh, yeah, he's just, I think he's so funny.
Yeah, yeah.
He's also really good in Mike and Dave Need Wedding Dates with him and Zac Efron and Aubrey Plaza and I can't remember the other, Allison Brie maybe?
Yeah, he does more kind of like raunchy roles now, but I think he could bring like a lot of goofiness, a lot of silliness to the role, and so I'd love to see him in big.
Yeah, that would be great. I like him a lot. All right, so... That will bring us to the next role, the role of Susan Lawrence, who was, like we said, she's Celia on Weeds, but she's also been in a bunch of other stuff. Pretty popular 80s, early 90s actress. She was 28 at the time, and she was pretty hot in this movie. I remember, like, when I saw it about... That's messed up. I was 8 years old, and I was like, yeah, she's hot. No, but I remember finding the character attractive.
You wanted to do a sleepover, didn't you?
Yeah, I did. But the trampoline, man. It's always kind of been a fetish of mine. That's messed up. All right, so I went with a character named Mackenzie Davis. And an actress named Mackenzie Davis, not a character. She's 30 years old now. She's about 2 years older than Elizabeth Perkins was at the time. She is a Canadian actress, and she was recently in Blade Runner 2049, the second Blade Runner movie, which I really liked. She's also in The Martian, and she's been on some episodes of Black Mirror. Oh, she's also in Halt and Catch Fire currently with... Dennis Leary, right? Isn't Dennis Leary on Halt and Catch Fire? No.
No. No, our buddies, Scoot
McNairy. Scoot
McNairy's
on it, but is... Oh, wait, what was the Dennis Leary show about firefighters?
Oh, gosh.
Something like that. So this is
Rescue Me.
Rescue Me.
Right? Why do I know that?
I don't know. Mackenzie Davis.
Oh, she's adorable.
Is my actress for the role of Susan Lawrence.
Like it.
All right.
Like it. All right, continuing with my very... transparent theme. I'm going with Priyanka Chopra.
Okay.
She's from the TV show Quantico. She was also in
Baywatch. Yeah.
And she's beautiful.
Is she the main character in Quantico? Yeah, she's gorgeous.
Yes.
I've only seen the first like 3 or 4 episodes of that show.
Yeah, I just want to see Danny Pudi like hook up with that.
Yes. I like that pick, and my lovely wife Michelle is a fan of that show as well. All right, cool. The last role for T. Hanks Giving.
Does Andrew want to win?
Oh, do you have one?
Oh, he's
no, he just he had was, the one.
He had the
he
one.
He had the one. The last role for T. Hanks Giving, the classic 1988 movie Big, Robert Loggia. Robert Loggia. I was saying off mic that he's always kind of reminded me of a poor man's...
Gene Hackman.
But he would, if he were still with us, rest in peace, he would probably not appreciate that.
You said that on mic, don't worry.
Oh, really? I did? Great. Yeah. Great. So I went first the last two times, right?
Sure.
He plays McMillan, the owner of the toy company, who they have a pretty iconic scene where they're in the toy store, the big toy store, and they're dancing on the like human sized piano. Very nice scene. Who do you got for McMillan?
Went with Brian George.
Brian George.
Most people will know him as...
B-R-I or B-R-Y?
B-R-I. Most people know him from Seinfeld as Babu.
What? Oh, yes. Okay. Yeah.
He's also like been in lots of things. Ghost World, Horrible Bosses, Hotel Transylvania. He did voice work. Yeah, that's him.
Yeah.
He's not Indian, but he plays Indian on all of his roles.
Is he Pakistani?
You know, he's Jewish, actually. He's from Israel.
Yeah. Once again, vaguely ethnic stunt casting.
Yeah. So, there you go. That is my Indian-themed recast of Big.
All right. I think that you are going to love my pick for the role of McMillan, originally portrayed by Robert Loggia. And I don't want to say it yet because I want to have the picture ready. And, oh man, it's so good. The picture's even in black and white, so he looks especially old. I'm going, what the fuck? That's Brian George. Now, Brent Spiner?
Oh, yeah.
He played Data on Star Trek The Next Generation. He is a... he's an actor who also was in the movie Independence Day as the crazy scientist. Mm-hmm. He's been in a few different Star Trek movies playing the role of Data, but just a really good actor who's about the right age now. He was born in 1949, so that would make him 68. So Brent Spiner is my pick for the role of McMillan. Do you recognize him?
Mm-hmm.
Data.
Yeah.
Right? Not data. Data.
True.
All right. So are we good on Big?
Yeah.
Are we good on T. Hanksgiving?
T. Hanksgiving.
I'm thankful for David S. Pumpkins and also Josh Baskins and Captain Phillips. I'm the captain now. And also the Miracle on the Hudson, Sully. Yeah, so real quick before we wrap things up, we want to give a shout out to a couple of different podcasts that we met recently. One was some kids from Fayetteville who came down to Seminar Brewing and were hanging out in the beer garden, and I like tried to pimp my podcast to them, and they're like, well, that sounds an awful lot like Nateflix. Hey, Nate, come over here. So there's a podcast out of Fayetteville, North Carolina, just up the road. It's a guy named Nate Flix. Nate and his buddy talk about movies. And check them out because they are checking us out. They subscribed and we subscribed to them. That's the way it works. That's the podcaster code. And then also another podcast that we... we're recently introduced to that we want to give a shout out to is
the Nerd Bliss podcast.
Nerd Bliss, and where are they out of?
I'm not sure. I see a lot of stuff out of North Carolina, so I'm guessing Charlotte. But gotcha. They're nerds, but they talk about everything from Star Trek to beer.
Oh, and nice! So they're like a buffet of nerdism.
Yeah. So so shout out to them, and I think we have mutual follows from those guys. So
nice!
Hooray!
All right, so that's going to go ahead and wrap up the show. We want to thank you, sir, Sean, for being here. The Brew Boss is back. And any further plugs?
Well, we're going to go to the brewery and play skee-ball.
Skee-ball!
Because we just got a skee-ball machine, y'all.
And
foosball.
Skee-ball and foosball now at Seminar Brewing. That's seminarbrewing.com.
Thank you.
And we want to plug the podcast itself. We want you to check us out on the interwebs. We're on Facebook. It's facebook.com/cinemachopshop. We also have a Twitter profile. We are... at cinemachopshop on twitter.com. And of course, our email address is like it should be. It's cinemachopshop@gmail.com. That's just logic, you guys. And then also coming up soon, we will have a profile on the beer check-in website, Untappd, UNTAPPD, where we will be checking in the beers online that we're also checking in here on the show. I want to thank producer, engineer, editor, extraordinaire, the Canadian in your brain again, Andrew Tay. Woo-woo!
Happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving. Is Thanksgiving in Canada the same time, or is it...
It's in October.
Okay.
It actually dates back to an event older than American Thanksgiving.
Yeah. Martin well, it Frobisher should, because the actual basis for American Thanksgiving is bullshit.
Yeah.
Like, oh, we... Never mind. We're not getting into that. We're not getting into the plight of the Native American, even though it's a topic that's very near and dear to my heart. But with that, very comedic and
way to end on an movie, up note,
movie themed note. Thank you to you, the listeners, the Cinema Chop Shoppers out there. Please continue to listen and tell your friends about us. And of course, please remember to watch, chop, retrofit.